probably for at least some of the other sessions, is against my better judgment and an insult to your level of erudition. The material I've been asked to cover should not require shiurim in any formal sense whatsoever. By the same token, there are a number of discrete problems that do arise, and at least to some extent, the material and the information is Teresh of Alter rather than Teresh of Iksad. So what I gather I'm supposed to be doing is to run through the marriage problem and ritual, highlighting matters that should be of interest and concern to the Sadri Kedusha. Is that what I'm supposed to be doing? Obviously, what I'm not going to do is to go through Hilchos Tishus and Hilchos Kedushin and Hilchos Moros, and that I leave to you. Let me start with the beginning and try to highlight the shailas and draw your attention to the sources, few and sparse as they are. The first item that I have on the agenda is Shiduchim, by which I mean the writing of Tnoyim. In the normal course of events, the writing of Tnoyim should not present any particular problem. A couple gets engaged, and as long as I'm talking about engagement, I should draw your attention to, this doesn't affect Rabboni specifically, to the comments of Rav Henkin, who has problems with the giving of an engagement ring, particularly if the engagement ring is handed over in the presence of witnesses. That you'll find in the, the Rishi of the ladies of Rav Henkin, whatever. But in any event, wherever there is an engagement, there can, of course, be Tnoyim. However, for reasons that are not of great concern to us, in the prevalent social structure, a lot of people don't write Tnoyim before the wedding, and then suddenly at the wedding they become very cruel and they insist on writing Tnoyim. It may be kind. The Rav Henkin seems to think that it may be test of tradition. That's why I don't want to talk about it. It's there. I don't want to talk about that at all. I don't really think it's a problem. He just thinks it's a problem. But the services, if you know, aiding, there isn't a problem at all, because they don't hand it over publicly at the engagement party. All right, let me then go on to the problem tonight. Some people don't write Tnoyim earlier and then want to write Tnoyim before the chuppah. Their reasoning, although I don't have the Iksav any place with reasoning, certainly not with regard to the current situation. What happens today in this country, to the best of my knowledge and information, never happened in the old country. Nobody ever wrote Tnoyim immediately before the chuppah. That came here when either because some people didn't write Tnoyim at all, or because they were reluctant to write Tnoyim in an earlier point, they suddenly decided before the chuppah, Rav Mandi, the Mandi Makadish, who was Yiduchi, and now in order to escape this curse of Rav, we have to, this punishment that Rav stipulated, we now have to go and write Tnoyim. The writing of Tnoyim before the chuppah presents a very serious problem, halacha, far more serious than Rav Mandi. There's a Chamudi Daniel in Yerdeya, it's cited as this issue, but it's in Shul Tzadik Bey, my apologies for not having included it in the Maram Mekainis. The Chamudi Daniel at least discusses the problem that the writing of Tnoyim may be a new Tavua Rinota. Chazal Warfeshish, that any time you make a marriage proposal to a young woman, she may have some incremental spotting which renders her anemic. And therefore, Medina de Gemara, every Kala, even if she hasn't had a period, is required to count the Shiva Nakim and go to the Mikveh. Now the problem is what constitutes Tavua Linose. We're obviously dealing with something that causes an imbalance in the endocrine system, and it's extremely prevalent. You can see some manifestations of that, the tip of the iceberg, in a medical condition which I call kalaitis, the fact that young women who have been absolutely regular for years before the wedding suddenly go off kilter in the 2 or 3 months before the wedding, and the result is an extremely high prevalence of the chuppas nidah, even though precautions are presumably taken to avoid it. That again is a very common problem. The problem of a chuppas nidah is a different problem, one that's not on our list of topics at all. But in any event, What causes this to happen, nobody really knows, and Chazal certainly understood the phenomenon, and hence, if you go through a process of Tfilas Snoim, it sounds to me not only technically in terms of what Chazal were chayshish for, you now have a halacha that is divorced from the reality. They were chayshish that Tavua Linosa, she may have damid it, and if this constitutes a tfiyah, then it goes into the Gzeira Chazal. But the point I'm making is that quite apart from a blanket Hakonah Chazal, it seems to me that nobody knows enough about what creates endocrine imbalance, and that the emotional excitement associated with the Tnoyim itself certainly presents a rational shash of Nida, and there is reason to suspect that even though there have been Shidduchim of one kind or another, but if there is not going to be Ksivas Katanoim and the Kala understands what it's all about, this may constitute a new Tavua Linase, which will now require a new Shiva Dikim, which you cannot possibly have between the time of the Smorgasbord and the Chuk, unless you have a very elaborate Smorgasbord. Yes. Now comes the resolution to the problem. The resolution to the problem isn't simply to have it take place at the chosen stage, but to make sure that the Kala is unaware of it and does not take place in our presence. If you want to have your cake and eat it too, it certainly eliminates the problem of Ran Mangida Madamakadish Peloishiduke. All that is required is to have a different nusach. You cannot use the printed nusach, the ones who are available in the Merchant Svarim. What you can use is Rav Moshe's Nusach, which has now been printed. I suppose I should give you a list of the Svarim Shimushim that are around. At least one of those has reprinted the full text of Rav Moshe. It also is much more appropriate under the circumstances, since it doesn't make much sense to talk about the Chosen and or the Kala going out and providing all kinds of things before the wedding. The wedding is going to take place in a matter of minutes. His Nusach says that everything the parties have agreed to has been satisfied, and we hope that's the case, otherwise you need another Nusach. The only thing that's left is for them to get married, and let them be married in the slack after whatever the rest of the next year. So that you have a formal shiduke, and if the Kala doesn't know about it, it certainly can't be in the category of the world of Nosre, which means that there is a Kabbalah opinion on the part of the Kala's father, or some other stand-in, not on the part of the Kala herself. And that seems to me to be a procedure that is good, Lotse Yidei HaKadosh. The only thing to remember is, particularly when you're dealing in a chasna situation that is not necessarily what you find in Williamsburg and Borough Park, that the Kala should not be present during any of this. Yes.
You're concerned because of the marriage
or something? I carefully said I'm concerned about both.
The whole night itself
is a tzvira. That's not a tzvira. It's a different kind.
Well, that's a bit of a
Chazal seems to distinguish, and whether medically it's based upon a phenomenon that can be easily identified and reported or not, I don't know. But it strikes me as making a great deal of sense. And I don't see the Badekin as being a deal, but a girl who knows what the Tnoim all about perceives it as a deal, and particularly she's aware of the fact that there are going to be Tnoim, she's going to participate in them. She knows, now it's final.
Now this
Now it's final. Now everything is in motion. In any event, I think the most people are concerned about this. I'm more concerned in terms of the blanket there as well. But either way, this seems to be a solution that avoids all of the problems. Number two, the second item on the list. Could somebody please go to my office? There's a some paper. And it may be you that right on the desk, I just forgot to bring it in. These deal with names. The name of Akosin and the name of his father-in-law, the name of the Kawa and the name of her mother-in-law, both are included in Tavor Vajira Hakosin as creating situations in which he advises against the marriage. Now, In some circles, this is taken very seriously. In other circles, it's not taken seriously at all. And I have particularly wanted to read you a little excerpts from both the Shulchan Aruch Yehuda and the Sam Sefer, two of the Amudei Torah, who is added to the Even among those who are concerned with these matters, there are a number of kulas that have been introduced. The first kula is the situation in which there are two names instead of one name. If one of the two names is identical, there seems to be no real reason to be concerned at all, even in the court of the Tzavot or Yudah Poshim. And that seems to me elementary. It's elementary because for whatever these things mean in terms of Kabbalah, two names are not two separate names. Two names are one name, which also has implications I'm not particularly interested in, but sleeping dogs lie. But in terms of naming children after individuals, for whatever it means in terms of Kabbalah, is to give that person's name, not to add additional names. Adding additional names is a way of blowing it, or at least so some people who are informed in matters of Kabbalah indicate. It's a new name. It's a new Shem, not the old Shem. And whatever it means, if you have two names, you don't have the one name. So that here, if there are two names, that's the first of the kulas. Another one of the kulas, thank you very much, is that the Yudah Apostle meant that only if these are the only names by which the individual is known. If the individual is known by other names as well, it doesn't apply. Those who provide some kind of quasi-halakhic basis for it, and there are those who do that. They say it's not so much a matter of Kabbalah, but it's either a problem of kibud ov or kibud ein, calling a husband by the name of a father, or people who were concerned that some michshul may arise if you call one person and another responds. Those all maintain that if, for example, a Shem Laz is used socially and is used interpersonally by the couple, the fact that there is a Shem Kedish that is the same as the father-in-law or the mother-in-law means that there's no problem at all. But all of those are technicalities and ways of skirting the issue entirely. I would rather draw your attention first to the name of the Yehudit, Madurit, Sambalist, Madurit, and Yom Yom Ezra, Simon, Ayin, Ted. Let me just read you the last few lines in the review. Here we're dealing with a case in which somebody became ill and they were Mashan Hashem. And this Shinui Hashem seems to have been the Shinui Hashem that the Rambam talks about, which is different from our Shinui Hashem. Our Shinui Hashem is the addition of a name. Once upon a time they didn't add names, but they changed names totally and completely. The old Shem was the Shtak, and then they had a new name. And the Navy Yehuda has a rather elaborate argument to the effect that Shinui Hashem can only help but can harm, and Rabbi Yehuda Chosid was regarded as having been concerned about Sakone. The new name, says Navy Yehuda, can't lead to any additional Sakone, so that if the new name is identical with that of the father-in-law, don't worry about it at all. But the important point of the last few lines, Novad Kolte, the Yichtovacha, Reisach, Eisonacha, Mitzkati, Mitzvim, Rabbonon, If you will take an Amor as long as his name isn't the same as the name of the Shver. But to worry about Chazal who say that the Matzah Bitu Amor is still a face of his Me'ari, that they're not worried about. Nabi Yehuda clearly was not at all concerned with regard to Tzavur or Yehuda HaFosid, and that is at least in part because he maintained that it was in Tzavur only to his own progeny. And indeed, the first part of the Zayin is also significant. He begins with the real problem. He says, Shalei Rako Shal and Shkoka Protis Vidivri Talmud Him Alaklau. I'm sorry, Shalei Dibel Rako Shal and Shkoka Protis Vidivri Talmud Him Alaklau. The native Yehuda, the best of my knowledge, is the first one who says that the Tavor, Rizunachos, was intended only for his children, grandchildren, etc. And he says that because otherwise it makes no sense at all. It's bordering on fear. He proceeds to give examples where we see the Chazal. Specifically, we have specific cases where they engage in practices that are decried in the Tzavot and Yudah HaKosis, particularly with regard to Yidduchim, and says, look, either it's spirit, or he intended it only for a Mishpacha Prati, for his own children, etc. Therefore, nobody else has to worry about it at all, period, full stop. That's the name of Yudah. The Chassam Sefer, and it's in Ezra Chelik Aleph Siman, Kuf Ches Zayin. Alvar Mishurit Reitzel David Ben Teiz of Bokhur V'Toy El V'Chayish Mashakosta Mashakosh Shalelo Mishun Shemes HaBokhur Im HaFoysen V'Shem Imre Kishen Imoz from Shalom V'Dachas. Says he Mantle Kofid Likab Dinun Bahadeh Gemara Zugis in Arabic Sofi. Says the Tam Sefer, if you're worried about it, then you have something to worry about. But if you don't worry about it, there's nothing to worry about it, so don't worry about it. But Rav Yiki comes to the Torah, that feel of the base, Eli discovered the Torah in those Tassotim. He says, certainly the Skus HaTorah, if the Chosin is a Talmud Tochum, it will be making on whatever possible Sakona there could possibly be. U Be'emes, Le Matzos Yikshar Zeb Sefer Chassidim, Klau Ki'im, Simin Tov Ayin Zayin Shom Nemad Leitzu Ova Ben Uben Aben Shloi Shonotim Sheshmei Shlosh Ben Shoves. Three generations in which the names are the same. The Sula Nimtzu Dover Vizel Tiburish Yivat Ofi Shmami Leblekish Fezid Midi Afrina Yin Zivugom Oilu Yotha, etc. Actually, Kalo Bekama Yisrof predates the Yivat Ofi, the earlier sources. With regard to Kalu the Chameis of Kosin, the place tonight is only Tzavor and Zahafosi. The name of the Kalu, the mother-in-law, does predate the Zahafosi, but that doesn't bother the Nadi Yehuda at all, nor for that matter the Tzam Sefer, even though he makes the point only with regard to place tonight. The place tonight says it's not all, it's not the Tzavor at all, and there seems to be different displays of the Tzavor, even among the printed editions, they aren't all the same. And the Tzam Sefer maintains that there was no such statement in Tzavot, so he wasn't concerned at all. Okay, we now have a happily engaged couple who are ready for the chuppah, which takes us to what is item. I'm going to skip Gimel because that will take us a little more time. I'm going to go on to Dalit, which is the Sidur Haksuber. And is probably the most complicated thing about the Seder Kedushin. The writing of a Ksubah can be very complicated. And if you don't know what you're doing, or if the Masada Kedushin doesn't know what he's doing, you have a Ksubah which is possible, which means that the Fos and the Kala are, to all intents and purposes, cohabiting without benefit of the Ksubah. And therefore, some of these matters become significant. You'll see on the list of Maramathanias, the first thing that I gave, the only thing that I gave you under this, is the Kuntres from the late Israel calling the shameness of our painting, which was intended for Misadre Din. But there's material there that is absolutely crucial for anybody who is Misadre Utsuba. And let me try to point out why this is important. It's important for three reasons. First of all, in every Tzuba, you have to write the name of the city. And if you're writing the name of the city, you have to know how to spell the name of the city. and I'm sorry we have to ask you again, I don't know after my day. There's the Beis Medrash of Shem and Ezer on my desk. Say the whole Beis Medrash Shem and Ezer. The first thing is the name of the city, and you have to know how to spell the name of cities, and that unfortunately is something that many people do not know how to do. It's not only the spelling, but how it is to be written. I constantly hear people being Masada Ksuba written in Brooklyn, New York. I am not aware of any city on this planet that bears the name Brooklyn, New York. There is a city called Brooklyn. There is a city called New York. There is also a state called New York, but no city called Brooklyn, New York. New York is the Shem HaMedina. We do not write the Shem HaMedina in the Get or in the Tzuba or in any other star for whatever reason. And if one is going to write the Shem HaMedina, then it has to be written in the city of Brooklyn, in the state of New York, the Medina of New York. You will also find in printed text the blank that you filled in with the name of the city, the America Hasafenis. For years and years and years, I was convinced that it was Amaratsis. I never knew where it came from. I finally discovered where it came from, and that's what somebody went out to get. Needless to say, there is no reason for writing it, and it doesn't make much sense to write. I would advise against using a printed form that has that that text. It won't possible to do. It's just not. I don't think Brooklyn, New York will pass for you.
Why?
I'm sorry?
Why
don't we write Medina?
In America, that's
yes. I once responded in writing to somebody who asked me that. I have tried to find a source. I have no source. I suspect the reason is simple. The Shem HaMedina changes, or historically, the name of countries change. Not so much the name of countries change, but if you look at the map of Europe over the last 500 years, cities that are one Medina were at different junctures in history and other Medinas, countries, whole nations, like Poland and Czechoslovakia, they're on the map and they're off the map, depending upon what happens in the war. Therefore, if what name of the city can change, it's certainly not among Jews. Even when Petersburg became Leningrad, Jews still called it Petersburg for years and years and years. And while today nobody's decided a guess with the name Petersburg in it, I have reason to question why not. Leningrad won't possible, but if somebody were to bring me a guess written yesterday with the name Petersburg in it, I'm not sure if it's possible. By any means, sorry, to this very started. People were writing today. Are not writing Petersburg, the Vizcaya Leningrad, which maybe they should be doing, I'm not sure. But I don't think it's necessary, that's why I'm not making a quibble about that. To this very day, a get written in Amsterdam is written Amsterdam, Mosel, like Amstel here. He got his name from the river Amstel, and to this day says and writes it that way, even though nobody calls the city Amsterdam anymore, or Amsterdam, whatever, the Lama here someplace. And the reason is you write the name of the city the way the city is known among Jews, not the way it's known among the general populace. And there's a second principle that once a Shem is Muchzak, it remains Muchzak. Now, what happened in Petersburg is that for the longest time, Jews kept on calling it Petersburg. Today, Jews don't no longer call it Petersburg. The Shem Petersburg may be Shaka, and therefore, if you leave it out, it certainly won't possible today anymore. I suspect that the people who changed the writing of Petersburg to Leningrad weren't exactly the most proficient in the young Medina. And what they wrote was to write the name as it is known today, which certainly won't possible. At this point, it's no longer Musrat as Petersburg, so I see no reason to go back and write Petersburg. But in places such as Amsterdam, where there was a Desden Kavua unbroken, and Desden that knew what it was doing, they kept on writing exactly as they wrote 500 years ago without any change, which is perfectly acceptable. So the first thing, the first reason that you must know the cloline of writing the vernacular in a tsuba is the proper way of writing, is writing the name of the city. New York is a typical case in point. It is now accepted and common practice to spell New York Nun Vav Aleph Yud Aleph Reish Kuf with a short space between the Aleph and the Yud, between New York, certainly on the same line and not on two separate lines. Usually a shear of a half a letter is left to show that the two are pronounced together. Now, there was a great deal of discrepancy and disparity with regard to the writing of Yidden in New York. The word canon was spelled in a variety of different ways. This is a typical case in which the spelling follows usage in the Jewish community. No one who speaks English properly says that the city is New York. The city is New York. It should be Nun Yud Vav. Jews in Yiddish say New York, not New York. For that matter, the current populace of the city, which doesn't speak the proper English, has adopted the Yiddish pronunciation. There was a time when Jews hailing from various places called it Nev York, even Ny York, or what have you, and in those neighborhoods and those times, that spelling was reflected in the way that the word New York was written. If you want an interesting tshuva, let me see if I can find it quickly. I seem to remember that it's Rav Yossi Nachmanson in, I'm sorry, it's the Beis Yitzchok. There's a tshuva in the Beis Yitzchok, Evan Ezer Simen Ayin Hei. A get was sent to Lemberg in which New York was spelled Nev York, Nun Ayin Vov, Yud Aleph Reish Kuf, the Niskarya, New York, Nun Vov, Yud Aleph Reish Kuf, and there's a long tshuva explaining why it must have been the Sadr Haget wrote it that way. That is all of no more than historical information. Now, New York has become Muchzak as Nun Vav Aleph, Yud Aleph, Reish Kuf. What is interesting for my purposes, the only reason that I asked for this sefer, is that there was a get that was written in America in 1852, which reads, Kan b'Nay York Mose Nun Yud Yud Aleph, Yud Aleph Reish Kuf. The Yasok is Yoma Vana Hotzen Asher by America Hatzafainis. The get has the phrase Asher by America Hatzafainis. I will not identify the Masada of the get, other than to say it's not this part of the quote here. There is a tshuva of the Binyan senior Yankiv Etlinger, who writes of this individual who lived in America. Remember, the Lower Bonin in America. He calls him a teacher from Poland who is not a Boki in a Roy, which was a polite way of calling him an Amoris. The business of writing America and Sephardis clearly came from this individual and has absolutely no more than Allah. Yes?
What is the reason why it has to be, like you say, the Muchzak? If anybody can look at the word New York and identify it as New York, or how is it taking the track from the Tuba? I don't know.
How will it distract from the Tuba?
Yeah, I don't understand why. I mean, as long as it's identifiable, when I pronounce it, I might have a
teacher impairment. Yeah, the misspelling of the name of the city will probably not possible the tshuva. I'm not so terribly worried about that. It's just, you know, there's a right way and a wrong way. You do things the right way. And again, it can make a difference, and it can make a real difference.
Right.
But, you know, there's a right way and a wrong way.
Okay. Yeah. Who determines that? It looks like the New York has been about
That's a principle in all stories. When a name is Muksak, then you keep on spelling it that way. If for no other reason, then you have to make sure there's no shinui in the shan for purposes of the get. And that's, you know, Muksak, so you know where the city is, you've got to spell it correctly. This is the first item with regard to which you have to know how to spell a vernacular, and this is something that occurs in every get. I'm sorry, in every tshuva. The second reason that you have to know it is if you decide that you want to spell the Shem HaMishpacha. I frankly see no real reason to use a text that provides for the Shem HaMishpacha. and indeed I find it a chumra the osir zeikulin. The osir zeikulin being that if you make a mistake in the Shem HaMishpacha, you don't write it correctly, you've got a fossil ksub on your hand. And since, I mean, the problem is that the Shash is not known, there's a reason for it. The reason is that this is a large city, particularly a city like New York, and there may be two Yosef and Shimon. In a get, you write Kinuim, etc., so that it's not likely that there will be Huchsak, the same two individuals with all of the names and Kinuim identical. If you write only Hebrew names, it may very well be that there are two people with the same set of names. Now, as far as Halach is concerned, I probably should have given it to you as a true Jewish nation that says you don't have to worry about it. As long as it's not Huchsak, it doesn't pass. If it's Huchsak, it passes, and we don't have people who are Muchsik and shameless, people with their father's name, women with their father's name. A Huchsak is very unlikely in our society. But the result is that there is no real shad. However, there are texts, primarily one which is printed and issued by a well-known rabbinic organization at the behest of the competent halakhic authority, that has a blank, l'mishpachas or whatever, you have to fill in the blank. Now, if you fill in the blank, you have to know how to fill it in, which means you must know how to spell the name of the family, otherwise there's a Shinri Hashem, and you have a possible Ksuba, which is, if you use that text, the major reason why it's absolutely necessary to be a bookie in how to spell English names in a Ksuba. Number three, and this is more serious. Their Kabbalah is irrelevant. Totally irrelevant. You have to spell the name the way it's supposed to be spelled, not the way they spell it. And it's spelled for purposes of Ksubas and Gittin in accordance with the rules, close quote, not the way it's spelled by newspapers or what have you. Now, number three, and this is significant, particularly in our day and age. There was a time, and maybe there still is a time, when children in Talmud Torah, and I hear tell some day schools came and they didn't have Hebrew names, they didn't know the Hebrew names, and the teachers began passing out Hebrew names. Somebody's name was Susan, didn't have Hebrew name, so the teacher decided that the Hebrew name was Sora. This can only present serious shailas of halacha. There's no reason to do that. We need not be so chauvinistic. Even the Maimar Chazal Shalei Shinui Shemon is the act of Shinui, to take a Hebrew name and convert it to a vernacular. If somebody never had a Hebrew name, there is no reason whatsoever to go around giving the person a Hebrew name. If you do give the person a Hebrew name and it sticks, wonderful. The problem is that the person gets a Hebrew name, or as sometimes happens among Misadri Kedushin who don't know what they are about, they have a Chosna Makala, and they assume that because her English name is Lorraine, so she must have been called Leah, and they proceed to write Leah, which was never a Hebrew name in the first place, and you have a Ksuba which is falsal without the slightest question or shadow of a doubt. Now, so far I'm speaking only prophylactically. You shouldn't go around handing out these names because later you have problems. The question is, what happens when you come to a chuppah and there is no Hebrew name, or as is more likely the case, the Shem Ha'aretz, and that's the Hebrew name, name given at birth, is Nishtaka. What do you do then? I will share with you one autobiographical anecdote. When I was newly married, learning in the Kollel and trying to keep body and soul together, I had a weekend position in Plainfield, New Jersey, and lo and behold, I was blessed with a problem. I had a chuppah. Who needs a chuppah? But there's a chosn, there's a kallah, they're going to get married, and I go through the standard interview, and I collect the names well in advance, and I'm told that the chosn's name is Shloimeh, and everything is fine and dandy, and I know what the kallah's name is, and I come to the chuppah, and I now check again, because I had only met the parents and the chosn and the kallah. The parents were not exactly the most knowledgeable people, and a fortiori the chosn and the kallah weren't, but here's an alta bode, and there are a few ants floating around. So I asked the bode whether she remembers what name was given to her enikel, and she says that they gave him the name Shmuel, not Yeratata. Comes along an ant from the other side and starts screaming, what do you mean? The name was Shlema after my who knows what. And the machatonim were screaming between each other, was the name Shloimeh, was the name Shmuel. I mean, I can tear their hairs out as much as they like, but it's obvious to me that this name is in Sakkah. Nobody remembers what the name is. If you're fighting about 25 years later, then it's clearly forgotten. And that this is a Shem which is Mishtakach and should not be written incidentally. You will find differences in practice among the Sadri Yidden. In general, Chassidim are very, or I shouldn't call them Chassidim, the Chassidim Sadri Yidden are very quick to rule that a Shem is Mishtakach. A name which was given at a bris and may be used at a bar mitzvah, not since, they regard as being Mishtakach. And they do not write it in a get, let alone a ketubah. I have already had a situation in which I received a ketur, a young man was divorced, and the Masadar Hakiyat did not put in his Hebrew name, and I wrote the Hebrew name in the ketubah. I did not consider it to be Mishtaka. The Masadar Hakiyat regarded it as being Mishtaka. I had more reason not to believe it was Mishtaka from the Masadar Hakiyat, because lo and behold, he sent out wedding invitations with his Hebrew name. But in any event, and the get is kosher, it's no problem. So you left out one name, there were enough other names. You don't have to have every name. Lachatchila, I might have quibbled, but the evidence was certainly kosher. But I proceeded to write the Hebrew name. Among others, and the Shuvahs here come from one of the earliest is the Vignesian, and certainly among the Misnagdim, the principle was that a Shem given for purposes of Inyone Kiddusha is not regarded as as long as the individuals still remember and retain it. But when they, now the person who's Eilu L'Teir, even if it's once in 5 years, that's the name that he uses to be Eilu L'Teir, it's Hashem Kodesh, and by definition, it's the Iker Hashem, and you write it as long as it is used and remembered. In the case of my Shmuel, his English name was Stephen, and lo and behold, He spelled it S-T-E-P-H-E-N. I was more nervous than the Chosn and the Kala. I had already written a Shloimeh, if I could give the names originally. I had to tear that one up, and I had to decide whether I'm spelling it Stephen or Stephen, whether the Shem HaKriya or the Shem HaKsiga is the Eker. And I began writing and messed that one up as a result of nervousness, and I didn't have a third super. So I had to sit laboriously and write out the ketubah. The president of the shul was there. He was an old shul president, an old shul youth of the kind. Unfortunately, very few of them are still extant. And he asked me what's going on. I explained to him exactly what happened, that I had brought a ketubah and wrote the Hebrew name, and I discovered that the families can't agree on with regard to what the Hebrew name is, and therefore I can't use the old ketubah. So he asked me, I hope you know little Yiddish and Rebbe, what's Rebbe Schreiden? So I said, who Schreiden? Stephen. And he turns to me and said, Rebbe, that I have so much as I thought Reform Rabbi. To which I responded by saying, how was I? There were a number of other problems at that point. But this is the area for which you will most frequently have to be able to deal with a vernacular and how it is to be spelled in Iksubis. Babin Yusainu Harabin. There are many cases in which there either never was a Shem Harisha, Irisa, which is a Shem Kodesh, or if there was a Shem Harisa, it's clearly Mishtaka, and there is no reason to write the Hebrew name, and hence you have no choice but to write the English name. Now, it's for that reason that Stephen, or the Shem Kri is the Iker, not the Shem Tzim. Now, I've given you the Kloin the Shemus. The full title is Kloin the Bikduki Akshivish or Shemus Loyad. We certainly cannot go through everything that our thinking says. A lot of it is not terribly relevant for Ksubis. Some of the things deal only with the Gitan. And I would caution you that while he presents a list of names and the spelling of those names, he himself indicates that the list is not sacrosanct, and that there are certainly cases in which, A, there may be a difference because of pronunciation, B, there may be differences because others would not accept some of these principles in terms of how the names should be written. Let me just give you a few elementary principles. Number one, you don't use middle names. Forget the middle name. Middle names don't exist for these purposes. That makes your job only half as difficult as it would otherwise be. So thank God for small mercy. A middle name is just used. Yes, middle names that people don't use. They're not called by the middle name. Outside of the southern part of this country, very few people are called by the middle name. People sign the name, a name, initials, and last name. On legal documents, the full name is spelled out, but nobody calls the person by both names. The person is commonly called by one name, and usually signs either both names or signs an initial. Even if he signs both names, it's to be ignored. The Shem is the Shem HaKriyah. And the Shem HaKriyah is usually one of those two names. For most people, it's the first of the two names. Yisrael Moshe is a nice Hebrew name. Yeah, I thought Jews call Yisrael Moshe. Jews use two names when they give a name. The guy's name, who's the girl's name comes from Mary Beth. Most people don't call her Mary Beth. They call her Mary. And she signs her name Mary B. Cohn. And for purposes of the ksuvah, you have to know how to spell Mary. You don't have to know how to spell Beth, because you're not going to spell Beth at all, and you're not going to use the initial B. Yes? A middle Hebrew name which is not used, if it was given at the bris and is used when the person is Eilu L'Teirah, that's the Shem Arisa, the cradle name. The cradle name is the full name. In a get, he would write Chaim Yankiv, the mystery Chaim. Now, he's the bris that gave the name Chaim Yankiv, and he's Eilu L'Teirah Chaim Yankiv, and everybody calls him Chaim. So his name is Chaim Yankiv, the mystery Chaim. People call it Chaim, but in a get, you use all the names. In the Ksuba, you will use the Shem Arisa alone, and his Shem Arisa is Chaim Yankiv. All right? That's principle number one. Principle number two. There are no double letters. And again, a caveat. There are some cities in which people wrote the name of the city using double letters. For what reason, I have the vaguest idea. And it's still done because it was muhzak that way. Buffalo is the case in point. Buffalo should have one pay, not two pays. It's muhzak with two. But it does mean that if you're coming to a place where there was no Jewish issue and it wasn't muhzak for purposes of Seder Yidin, and you are now the Morad Asher and about to be Tevei of Hashem, please do it correctly. Also, there are... Yes? Same principle. These principles apply to Shem Mishpoch as well. There is no double letter. Gutman will not get a double test, let alone a double nun. Yeah? I haven't even gotten to vowels yet. Vowels are the real problem. So far, we're dealing with consonants. Yeah, double test. All right? There are. Two vav isn't a double vernacular consonant. Two vav is the sign of a double yom. That's how you transliterate the double. You transliterate it as a two vav. Okay? There are also no silent letters. You spell it phonetically. And if there is a letter written in English that is not pronounced, it is to be ignored. I would also draw your attention to section Yud-Ches in Rav Henkin's Kuntres. Rav Henkin points out that there is often a situation in which some people do not pronounce an R. He gives an example, Charles or Charlie. In some sections of the country, it's pronounced Charles or Charlie. Rav Henkin maintains that it should be, the reish should be included, because there's a kiyesh kan hargoshet dakor. I won't bother putting it since in New York the R in Charles is pronounced. However, if you find yourself in some other area of the country, it's not a question of halacha, it's a question of the tzius. and you have to have a very good ear in order to know how to spell some of these names. You have to know whether the sound is pronounced in some vague or soft manner, or whether it is totally silent. So that you have to deal with every letter, and or every name that is, and you have to deal with it within a given context in order to know how the name is pronounced in the area in which you are drafting the tzuba. Yes. I'd rather not have to deal with that. I'd prefer to deal with it before the fact. Is Charles and Charles a Shinui Hashem? I submit to you that in some circumstances, yes. If you're living in the deep south and there are two people in the town, one comes from up north where they pronounce the R, and he is known to the locals as Charles, and somebody else is known as Charles, it may be a Shinui Hashem, and very likely that it is a Shinui Hashem. If they clearly pronounce it one way and now you've written it another way, it sounds as if you're referring to another individual. Now, it depends. There may be Shinui. Take this as an example. Rav Enkin would have said it's not a Shinui Hashem because he was firmly convinced that you can hear the R even in the south. You don't hear it so well, but there's something there. Therefore, it can't be a Shinui Hashem. There are other situations in which it depends. Nobody wants to have to deal with these things, certainly not in Eaton, and preferably not in Ksubas either.
In the case where you can hear some reference to the letter, but it doesn't sound like the letter.
That's what Rav Henkin meant when he read what the Nuadak, whatever he called it. It's a sound that we don't have a corresponding sound in Hebrew, but there is a sound that's not quite a rage, but it's something, therefore he says you can write the R. The rage becomes an indication that there is a sound which is now being transliterated. Now that depends. I'm not sure that in the deep south there's anything. Maybe there is, maybe there's not. You have to listen very carefully to determine whether there is or there isn't. But he is dealing with a situation in which there is a sound that isn't an R or a rage sound. And if you listen carefully, you'll hear it. It's not a pronounced, definite, and unambiguous sound. But when there's no sound at all, even where I'm thinking to you, that it shouldn't be written. Then there is a problem with regard to the writing of English names which correspond to biblical names in situations in which the individual never had a Hebrew name. You have somebody who got a name David or Abraham, and nobody ever called him David or Abraham. The Hebrew did not have a birth of the child, if not presumably correct in the course of it, but he certainly doesn't have a Shem Arisa, which is David or Abraham. They write the name David or Abraham. Clearly, if you were to spell it David or Abraham and spell it correctly, it wouldn't possible. You don't want to do that because it's A, it's easier to write David and Abraham, and B, the kind of the general feeling is you might be able to write the Shem Kodesh rather than a Shem title. Rav Henkin in this case is something of an extreme. He says it's perfectly okay to write David or Avraham under those circumstances. For purposes of teaching, very few people, well, there are some, would write David Hamakuna David. The principle, and here I mentioned that would be correct, the principle is that the English name in this case, or in these cases, is a derivative of the Sardis pronunciation of the Shem Kodesh. David is David to Sardis, which was early English, presumably, and David became David. And therefore, it's the same name. Everybody uses the same name. So therefore, there's no reason to use the anglicized version of what is clearly a Shem Kodesh. And Rav Henkin would maintain that if you have somebody who's never had the name David or the name Avraham, and you write David and Avraham in kosher, although clearly nobody would do that when I feel it in a guest, nor do I think it should have been done in a tshuva. Even though it's a biblical name, but you never had the Shem Kodesh, the name should be spelled in accordance with the anglicized version. One case which is similar but a little bit different, a woman who was never called Ruth at birth, but is known as Ruth. Rav Henkin maintains that you should spell it Reish Vov Tov. I say this is
degree, I would spell it really the wrong text. Phonetically, the text is the sound of the T, as we vocalize for maintain, for obvious reasons, maintain that it's perfectly all right, even when I feel it, spell it as root, since the soft of root can also be pronounced as a soft. And in this case, it becomes root instead of root, and the TH is rendered as a T sound, so if you read it, you read it root. I wouldn't do it because Ashkenazim that we are, not Sephardim, we read it under the hook that you handed it to me to read, I would say, Hakala Psula root, not root, and her name is not root. Her name is root, not root. And but in any event, this is one of the problems with the writing. This is simply one of the extensions of the general problem of an anglicized biblical name. With regard to others where the Hebrew could not possibly be pronounced as the English, we're not too certain you would vocalize it in accordance with its anglicized spelling. One other point with regard to vowels, and that is the J or the soft sound. Here there is a difference in practice. Rav Hankin says that the J sound should be spelled Dalet Zayin, so does Rav Hankin, and so do most non-Hasidic Sadrachim. The Hasidic, as I go Hasidic Sadrachim, I'm using that only for place identification, you know, for purposes of identification only. In some circles, they write Dalet Zayin. The objection is that in the Russian phrases, you never have one sound represented by three letters. And here you're dealing with a sound that cannot be represented by two letters in the Russian phrases. The danger is that since in the Russian phrases, you don't have three consonants represented in a single sound, it may be mispronounced, or it looks as if it can't be mispronounced. In these circles, the preference is for the Dalet Zayin. That doesn't mean that this is universal practice by any means. The practice of the Beis Din of the Tzaddik Rabboni is to write Dalet Zayin Shin. The practice of others is to write Dalet Zayin. I clearly prefer Dalet Zayin. I have to make that clear here. Yes. No, that's a Sephardic practice.
Vocalization.
One that we don't have.
I'm not
sure. That's how the Loyazim write. The Loyazim, how people write in modern languages, they do it that way. That is the convention that's been adopted in modern literature. In Gittin and Subit and Story, apostrophes don't. That's not part of our element. Therefore, we don't do it. I hear tell some of our what do you mean, modern Hebrew for the problem? They write it to the Ashkenazi did it?
No,
Sephardim has adopted this one, or the apostrophe, or whatever they call it. I heard tell that Sephardim has adopted it. We have Ashkenazi has not adopted it.
This is part of
the
language.
I repeat, we haven't adopted it. You're asking whether it could be adopted. Can you make a new letter of the Hebrew alphabet? Right? I'm not sure that you can have a new Hebrew of the Hebrew alphabet for purposes of a get. For purposes of a get, I have serious problems because the get is written in two languages as possible. And we have enough problems with Hebrew and Aramaic, and we have the operation to say that it is a new language called Lashon HaTalmudi. Now, to go use the slash, it's not part of the Hebrew alphabet, it's imported someplace else, may present a problem. Will it be possible to do this? It's not going to be possible. Should it be done? No. It's a matter of commonly accepted means of vocalization and spelling, and that is not accepted. It is unacceptable. Yeah. No, we don't use Yiddish spelling at all. No, I'm sorry? What is Yiddish
spelling?
No, these are phonetic spellings. These are phonetic spellings, not Yiddish spellings. And the question is, which letters represent which phonetic sound? And now the problem is, what do you do with a J? There is no J in Washington Davis. And if you got to go vocalize and transliterate a J, how do you do it? Well, this is the design that they came up with. And there are clearly three possible devices. Dollar Zion, or Gimel slash. I'm sorry, Gimel apostrophe, what have you. And the problem is that Gimel apostrophe isn't on our keyboard, and we don't have a letter. These are just letters in the alphabet. And that one isn't a letter in the alphabet, and hence we're still not a vowel. I haven't gotten to vowel. No, not quite. Yeah, sense, we'll come back to that. I haven't gotten to vowels. Let me make one more point with regard. Yes. No. We don't have hyphens. We don't spell with hyphens. Our hyphen is a sheer of half an inch. The name Benzion, for example, you write one line and you leave the space of a half a letter. But you write Benzion as two separate words with a half a letter in between. That is the equivalent of our hyphen. New York, we gave you before, the written family. Is pronounced as a th, not as a th. Therefore, if you have the name Philip, we have a problem. If you spell it with a say so it will be pronounced Philip. And since the name is Philip, not Philip, you use a regular say, even though it's the end of the letter. All of these are called of principles that you'll get from our The who? Yeah, the first thing you do it that way, it's not the way you do it. We don't do it. Again, it's not part of the alphabet. You don't do it. You spell it that with a K. The K is ambiguous. A K standing alone. Now, of course, if you close the picture at the beginning, is when you pronounce with a W. But the letter itself can be read either fit or fit. The problem is that the same three C's can never be read as a fit. It's always read as a fit. That's why there's a problem. Other letters are inherently ambiguous. Is it Begusha or is it not Begusha, at least according to our Havar? Varzim, or at least some parts, are able to distinguish among all the letters between one and another. And of course, they have, where we do not distinguish between letters and capitals, do not, they do distinguish. But here, where you're dealing with the K, there's no problem for us at all, since for us, the letter is inherently an ambiguous letter, which is a phrase that presents a problem because it's not ambiguous. I think I take care of all the consonants. Let me then. No. Not test. It can't be test. Tete would then indicate to us that it should be, that her name is Ruto, with a comment under. And it would be very strange because we use the hey for a symbol of the comment only in a name which is Washington Davis, and this is becoming, we'll be looking very odd. We never put an H at the end, where either the letter is unpronounced, or, as in the case of English, if a TH sound, which is a single sound, and the sound is not either a test or a hey or a test or a hey together. It's just not. You're trying to manipulate the English affectation and transpose it to our Spanish where it doesn't even make sense. We don't have the TH sound. That's our problem. So what we do is use the T sound alone, not the TH.
What happens if they have a Yiddish? The Yiddish pronunciation has the same origin, like Mucha, as opposed to.
Again, I really should have thought about that. You've got names like Gruche or Henshe or who knows what. The normal reaction, the visceral reaction, was to say that if her name is Gruche, her name must have been Bruce, and that's what you're going to write, forget about everything else. Again, I submit, if people remember that the father went to school and they gave the name Bruce, fine, go ahead, no problem. If nobody remembers anymore, and very often you ask leading questions, was the name Bruce? And somebody will say, well, probably the name is Bruce. That's not how you go about it. Don't ask leading questions. If they don't remember themselves, don't try to refresh their memory. That means it was Yitzhaka. Even if it ever was the memory of Yitzhaka, and this girl's name is Ruth, not Ruth.
I'm not being in the case of synagogues. We have a girl, and she's known as her Hebrew name, Cecily, her given name is Rucha. So how
I asked, was her given name really Rucha?
Yes.
If the given name was Rucha,
how do you write it?
Ah, I don't know how to write Rucha. You got a problem. Okay. All right, you got a problem. I would have to hear the girl and her family pronounce the name. The way you pronounce it, it would have been Reish Vov Tzadik Ayin. Now, it could have been pronounced a little bit differently and would have required a test. Not likely, but at least within the realm of possibility. I'm sorry, not Ayin. It's not Aleph. We don't use Ayin. With an Aleph. Right? But, a generation ago, that was common. Today, in this generation, very few people give the name Rucha. They change it themselves. If you have the Baba with Rucha, and they're going to give the baby the name Ruth, then they'll call her Rucha. But in shul, they give the name Ruth. That's generally what happens today. A generation ago in Europe, it's not what happened. And you had women who were given the name Rucha, and that was the Shemarit. And you have to ask to find out what's happening, and be careful how you ask. As far as you can tell from the picture, you presume. No. If at the bris, the Yehi named Yitzchak Isaac, and was there with Sarah Yitzchak Isaac, and the Shem Kredit, the Shem Arisa is Yitzchak Isaac. That was the Shem Arisa. It's not Yitzchak, it's Yitzchak Isaac. It's one name. Now, this, you realize what happened over a period of years. I don't know what happened in our first case, but there are a lot of people out there who go around calling themselves Yitzchak Isaac for the life, and if you ask his father what name he was in the prison, they say, yeah, Yitzchak Isaac. And they afterwards began calling him Yitzchak Isaac, and the next generation thought that that was the Shem, and they gave the name of the prison, Yitzchak Isaac. So from then on, the Shem Arisa is Yitzchak Isaac, and if you don't know to the contrary, you must assume that the Shem Arisa is what he gives birth to be gold. It is gold. You spoke Isaac, you must assume that was the Shem Arisa. And indeed, if there was another Shem Arisa, you spoke it, it will be Yitzchak, which is why you assume it's only Yitzchak Isaac. If you're right, Isaac and nothing else, you certainly have the copy of either as Reuben or, for that matter, Yitzchak. All right? We have 2 minutes here. All right, let me try to go over some of the concepts briefly. One principle. Whenever the vowel is a period or a series, it is represented by one yud and not by two yuds. Lays is spelled lamid yud days, even though it sounds like a series and the ultimate integer now, lays is spelled with two yuds. However, there are some people who have that name, and you would write it with two U's, and that is that they're Hungarians and call themselves Lies. What is an AI sound, or a Patak U sound, is represented by two U's. The name Lays and the name Lies are two different names for your purposes, and you have to know what his friends call them. Is he called Lays, or is he called Lies, or Label, or Libel, or whatever? You don't use the T, or you're certainly not for his students. If everybody knows who his name is Lay, and they call him Label or Lively or what have you, you would write Lay, provided that it's known that that's his name. You can have other situations in which the nickname sticks and the name is not used for any other purpose, in which case you write the T, or you're not the name. Okay. Let's see, one more. The O sound is usually represented by an aleph vav, so that the Yiddish name Tova would be spelled Tes Ayin Vav Beis Aleph. The vav alone is used for a shuru for the double O sound in the school. Most significant for your purposes is the comment sound at the end of a word. That is represented in a shem rav with an aleph rather than with a hey. That's why Tova and Rosa or whatever Rutsa name you had before, in every one of those cases I told you to spell it with an aleph at the end, whereas in Yiddish and National Information you can spell it with an ayin at the end, and in Alzheimer's Israel now that's how it would be spelled. In Russian Kurdish you would probably spell it with a hey at the end. The ayin is used for a segel found in the middle of a word. The segel at the end of the name is usually, not always, usually represented by a comment. The only exception will be, in most cases, when you're Rutsha, Tzeder, or whatever, the last vowel is unclear, it's an unclear vowel. It doesn't sound like a segel, and it doesn't sound like a comment. It's vocalized very quickly, and it comes out as something in between. Therefore, we treat it as a comment with seven hours at the end. If you will have a situation in which it is heavily accented, and it's clearly a federal, Rav Moshe says we should spell it with an ayin at the end. And I don't know if anybody would agree. If there's a disagreement, it will be because they'll tell you it's never clearly pronounced at the end of the word, but there are clearly situations, particularly in nicknames, that it is clearly vocalized in the segel, in which case it would get an ayin at the end. This is a convention, and it's a convention borrowed from Yiddish usage, where the ayin is used as the sign of the segel, and the aleph is used as the sign of a comment. A pata ordinarily is not represented at all. You simply skip it. There are some cases where it's a judgment call. For example, the German name Hermann has to be from Hermann. Hermann would be spelled Mendel without any between. If the guy's name is Hermann, this is something of which people can differ. Some people would spell it Mendel, it's a Nahata, it doesn't ordinarily get any vocalization. However, it is clearly enunciated, it's even accented, and in order not to confuse it with Hermann, some people might spell it Hermann, Mem, Aleph, Nun. There are other cases where an aleph is put in for a pata in order to make it clear. The most common example is a situation where you would otherwise have three consonants, one following the other, and since you don't want three consonants, that will only be mispronounced, and one of them is a pata, you put in the aleph as an indication that there is a pata floating around there somewhere. Let me just confirm that in both cases, you can yes. Hermann.
You know what? Hermann. So you read it with Hermann.
I think so. I think you would use an I in just about every case. Now, I'll give you an example of a case where I'm not sure. You're right. Hermann can be pronounced a variety of ways. In Yiddish, you say Hermann, which is a clear I. And if this person, in general, when people travel from Jews and non-Jews, you use even the non-Jewish name the way it's used by Jews. Now, if the person has no Yiddish-speaking friends under the sun, there they call them Hermann, it sounds quite different. It's not an ayin, and it's not a hirish, in which case you still use the ayin, because that's how you use it for now. That's the best reason that you can use. If his name were clearly Hermann, it would be different. I don't know if anybody's name is Hermann, but there are names that present problems, like Beryl. Beryl can be written three ways, and depends upon how the person is called, which depends upon the locale, and this is what these people gray air. Beryl can be pronounced prison, they're not because of race and alarmist, and I think that most people write Beryl, they, i.e., race alarmist. There are some places and some people who call him Beryl, 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 you hear the i.e. clearly. So it becomes they, i.e., race, i.e., alarmist. Sometimes you hear the kid called Beryl, Beryl, and you hear the youth more clearly. So all the days I raised youth lama. Now, this, you know, in Europe there were different places, and it's so different with everybody in town with the same pronunciation. Here in this country it becomes extremely difficult because the same person can be called three different ways by three friends. Each one comes from someplace else. One place the guy's named Beryl, the other place they use Merrell, another Merrill, and they're calling this kid, poor fellow who doesn't know how they're supposed to be pronounced, they're just using their own pronunciation for his name. And you've got a certain element of confusion. In general, most cases, most people would spell Merrill, they Ayin Reish Lamed, and extrapolating from that, other situations would, when in that kind of vow, do exactly that. That's what Rafenkian advises, and in a certain sense, I shouldn't be doing this a certain amount by myself, because I'm very prejudiced. What little I know about famous people, I learned from Rafenkian to be entirely easy with him. And even though there are a number of cases in which I would not read differently from him, but with things like Beryl, his principle was that if you leave out the yud and the ayin, you can't go wrong. You can't possibly start reading it out. Since all that you've done is left out a consonant, it doesn't have to be there in the first place as long as one says it's concerned, and you can't harm, whereas if you put in the wrong consonant, you may not see that sense. My own hunch is that with something like Beryl, it's probably correct. You don't hear fear, you don't hear ayin. In other cases, you don't have anything with a good reason. It all depends upon what you hear. And you've got to listen very, very carefully. You listen to Mabos and Makawa and ask them what your friends call them. Ask them to tell you what their friends call them and ask them to repeat several times. Now, that's really not fair. I mean, I'm not giving you the principle of halachah. The principle of halachah is how this people is known most often. And that again becomes tricky. Most often by whom? His wife called him by name 20 times a day, and he may be an introvert who doesn't have much contact with people during the day, and there aren't three people during the day who call him by name. So he listens to the wife, and whenever her evening trip happens to be, and there's some attractive people who will say yes. Others will say, you look at his gazelle time, look at all the people, and what do they call him? My general rule of thumb is, and I find that he usually fairly reliable, in our society. People identify themselves and they are called by their peers the way they call themselves. Listen, they will not learn it. Chances are that's how other people will be heard. One other minor point where we're over time. There are some names that are very ambiguous and you can't tell from the name alone how to write. The name A-D-O-L-P-H. How do you pronounce it? What's the name? Patton Schiebelgruber. You know, the gentleman who was McFarlane sent to Hitler, actually. What? How old was his name? Adolf or Adolf? His name was Adolf. Spelled Alice, Dallas, Alice, Say. In this country, anybody who would give that name would pronounce it Adolf, which would be Alice Yud Dalit Alice Lamete. The problem is, if German comes to America, and some people still call them Adolf, there's fine Jews, not too far from here, who have the name Adolf, and some of their family call them Adolf, and some call Adolf. And how do you pronounce, how do you write it? That's what people say. The guy's wife, if he was married in the old country, called him Adolf. His American friend called him Adolf. Now you've got a problem on your hands. This is one. I don't know for purposes of a student. I would probably even write to the Adolf instead of the guy with Adolf if I had to say. Thank heaven all of those have Shem Arizu and Krizu. But in the get, it's clearly a case where you'd be writing both. You'd be writing Adolf and Sharia Adolf, and their problem then would be which would be massive. Is it Adolf and Sharia Adolf, or Adolf and Sharia Adolf? In that case, Adolf would probably kind of Shem Arizu anyway. He'd be probably writing Adolf and Sharia Adolf. But there are no absolute flow in all this. These are only the problems. All right, we're not going to get beyond this. For next time, I have given you some sources dealing with adoption, primarily the questions of Suleiko, Yichud, etc. I'll try to cover that and then go on to the rest under Dalit, as well as what follows beyond.
But Shlomo Husok in many different types of matter. Whether Shlomo is the whole piece of matter, or the whole piece is the same type of matter. So, since this is a question, Madhavi Shlomo is a creature. I can't ask what this is. Tamela, we respect, we don't have to say that these are changing the demand for the country. It seems to me that the whole talk should be a discussion. But these we should but we see from the Ramba, we see what I want to say, except not like the Ramba talk. The Ramba also says that there is that two people that we have a sure that we want. One that is strictly explanatory of the detail of the nature of the character of the detail of the other animals. That it has to be not a shiro, not a shiro. And another aloha, we have to make it clear to the end of time by not eating as a shiro. So even if you already ate the kasayim of lechem and meat, he is not allowed to eat other zeitzim of Hashem. That's not explanatory of the meat of our tamases. That's the next hour. So here we can see more. Insofar as the meat of lechem and meat, madar is only the kuso, a kapit kuso, in as much as yes kuso, not kuso, is not a question of what kind of head of matzah it is, because truth are anyway simchat of matzah. Simchat of matzah. So it's not as strictly of the ritual God. But it's an explanation. And the explanation there lies upon this machine in regard to the ritual of the Pasadon. So every young day there is every Shabbos there is a ritual in class. But things are not even the supposed to be what the Lord tells us because I is past that the future and time and future of the past and your death has to be left. But as far as the future of the other matters, there is a law of what I believe that the children be mixed and repeated. But as far as being the future is concerned, so it's not Yaki who came up with the government, but it's Yaki who came up with the state of being passed. But the same thing says, Friday, every 5 minutes, the right? Yechanan, but here there is an explanation of the, of Lachatim, to reach it, the current thing. Is the Rambam says, we are not supposed to need Lachatim. This week he already was retired the needs of the Rambam. We are not supposed to need Lachatim. So melee, so that means, according to this machine, that applies that into the mitzvah of eating pasayot. So the mitzvah of eating pasayot has to be fulfilled with lechem. That's why they say that the broche of halachas matzah is to recite that of the mitzvah. And what's up on this lechem broche? The broche of Hanit Lechem Yoret has to be recited that Yom Kippur. And the broche of Achilles Matzah should be recited on Yisroel, because in so far as the Yisroel of the Lechem Yoret, there is no Halacha of Lechem Yoret. There is Halacha of Lechem Yoret in the Matzah. When it relates to the nature of the Chetz of the Matzah, that's the Jewish Lechem, but when it's also the same Chetz of the Matzah, it's not showing that some melee, it doesn't affect the character of the meeting of the relative romances, but it affects on the character of the meeting of the incarnate, because it's an explanation. So the Shmuel says, the Birds are never in the Birds are never. And previously, với việc sắp kế sản phẩm đại sản phẩm đại thì với sản phẩm đại 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 sản And we call it media to our own self, we live. So everybody agrees that those components that are ahead of the condition of the sleep of the sleep, that they are living on the sleep, and also on the sleep, so it's one of the greatest things. But I think you tell about those components that are living on the sleep, and we consider it without our sleep. Well, it's not something you read, it's just your cousin's desire. And it's not that I'm going to be psychic and read. You just sit down, please, at night, instead of sitting on a few hours. Pesa, and I said, a few hours, there are some people who are Pesa, because things you said are happening to feel. Speaking of the Zeba, the heaven of the Venus Tower, can be revealed in heaven. Of the Shirah, some Melee, the Kvohet, that is the site of the Achilles Tessa, gave its calm and Achilles Zeba House, but of the Kiva Holmes, and those who are in the speaking of the economy of the Shirah, the zone of the Shirah, we also have some Melee. To the Rambam, because the Rambam passes the Shia components, the those components that are literally of the Israel, the Madon, the Sikhi, of the Shia, with nothing, some labor, so easy to sorry, so easy. So the Rambam can pass it by the Shia, and he can maybe recite the fear of the Abbasa, and the Buddha of the Tower of the Eight. I'm not saying. So let's read the discussion. Okay, so tomorrow, so July, October, March, it is left in the
presentation.
Now, an aloha has, so there is a service arrival. Now, just let's run over briefly aloha has again. בזמן הזה שאם שמקום מאחר שמבורך המיץ לחם, אחר שמבורך המיץ לחם, חידר מבורך לאכיל עצמצו. ומתאבל מצו בחרי שזיך. Now this is the Rambam Sheet, which is contrary to all Rishim. The Rambam Sheet is that Matzah also requires people בחרי. All that Rishim is saying, only Mori requires people בחרי. Matzah. The Rambam Sheet is that Matzah also requires Ibu Bacharim. So, Kosov arrived down the Hevel. Why the Hevel? Matzah is Chelim. In other words, there is no Ibu Bacharim in Matzah, only Mori. Only Mori. Now, in Mori Mishle, so there is a Machlekes between Kanekane and Elizabeth of Tzadik. And Kame said there is no mitzvah of Dibu Bahareses per se. The only union of Dibu Bahareses is in order because of Sakon. Because of Sakon. In other words, because the Hazere has a certain work and melee by being Dibu Bahareses, so we kill the work and in any way we eliminate the Sakon. But Rabbi Zvi Chaim Sofer says, no,
even when there is no Chazaras, let's say a Kovit and a Tamet, suppose you don't use Chazaras, you use, let's say, Tamchet, also. So then you don't have any Tabel, the Chazaras is all the time. But the Mother of Atzodik says, no. The Chazaras says, in the midst, Zecher Lepit, the Habdus of Mitzchah, and we pass through like the Mother of Atzodik. The Chazaras is in the midst. So Mele, all the Rishayim saying, that through the Chazaras, which is commemorative of the in trying is only Shayach Morash, because Morash is more as they can be and Chazaras is also Zechel Abdus. So Mele, there is a certain Shaykhs between Morea and Chazaras. Mashinji Mate, Mate's rule, Shon Rechel al Shmo, al Shemit, al Shurimismi, in Tikam Shlav, Sein al Hachmi. So in Tikam Cheos, Mate is not in Chalab. So what Shaykhs is there? To Chazaras. But the Rambam is not, because Mate, on one hand, is commemorating of Chayus, that's the time of Matzah Zushanayach Malshmo, Alshim Shalmis, Nisikim Shalmisim, Lachmit, and on the other hand, there is a Loch of Lachameini. So Lachameini is commemorative of Abdus. So there are two aspects in that. One is, it's commemorative of Chayus. That's the time Shalmis, Nisikim Shalmisim, Lachmit. And the other time of Mati is Rachameini. Some Mele, there is a Shaykhes to Chazaras, because Chazaras is commemorative of Abdus, and Mati is commemorative of Abdus also, not only of Chazaras. Then the Shaykhes are all right. Now the Amba is that Analoches, the Hakach, Mishav, Sude, ויחיל כל מה שהוא רצה לאחר, ושיסה כל מה שהוא רצה לשתיך. ובאחרינו איכל מצר הפסח, אפילו כזייס, ויתה מחפה. סודק תלוך הרבים, תיר נחר הפסח הפיקים. Now, the expression הפיקים is used in God Matthew, so slightly, it's not used in the memory, חזר, as an expression for Matthew. But Abkeimen, the more means, is not Matirin Achar HaPesach Abkeim. In other words, after the meat of Korban Pesach, you're not allowed to eat anything else. Because the meat of Korban Pesach means that you should be less things that you eat so that the time of Pesach will remain complete. So, then there is the Takoresach of the Machlechis, Shmuel, Machlechis of the Mor. Now, the more the Mishnah that could be Pesach and Bein said, we must tear in Achara Pesach at the king. My Apichene, Omer Rav shall be Yaku Mechabura Mechabu. So, Rav says, Apichene means that we shouldn't be eight here from one Chabura to the other Chabura. Omer Rav, now let's see the Rashba. Omer Rav, Shriyakum Chabura Mechabu. Acha Shochwa Pesach Mechabura, ויחלו בחבורה אחרס לאחר, לא יפס ולא ישום דבר. זה עוד ימוס על מיך על הפסח בשני מקים. הלוח איז, הפסח כנת בית בשני מקים. ואנן תנן סתמת שרביולי בחיית הטרי, מפסח נחל בשני חבור. ומחלקים את רביולי הם רבשים את סטוודה פסח כן בית מיתו חבור אז נסימון. זו רביולי שאיר, Shimon says it cannot be eaten into chaburas. But part of the Pesach he'll leave to one chabure, and the other part of the Pesach he'll leave to the other chabure, in the same place, but add another chabure. So then he cannot do that, according to Rav Shimon. But the Yehuda holds Pesach Nechol b'shnei chaburas. But it cannot be eaten in shnei mikimes. Ve'in eichel. Eichel HaPesach b'shnei mikimes. והחיות של רב איקנו שם בשסחיל. אבל אחר אחרי, יוכל מאוקי הבדלמה, חלו בחבור אחר. שזאת יד, זאת בדימור עם צוחי. One citizen even says, ah, so he can go to another place and say there halam. And halam will copy it on the echel to basis. Abu echel for machirin in Jimen, Abu echel for machirin in Jimen or Ishin Nishon. So in other words, so here I call it Rab, Matira Habesa Habdimen means, but so that he cannot do. But to eat something after the Pesach in the same okay in the corner of the Rav, he is allowed. In other words, who doesn't pass from the Rav? Abu Echim Barachim Jimmy or Rishay, sure Rav, who will watch the Akal Echo Habulah. Oh, so I will on that. Can really is Lyalab. So in other words, Shmuel is Chilikamra. And Shmuel is Chilikamra. And Shmuel says that we are not allowed to eat anything. To eat anything, even the same mocking after the Achilas HaPesach. For example, I am accustomed to eat after the meal. So in other words, we would be really would really, and what is Shmuel was the father, that was the comfort for Shmuel. In other words, it's Kinuach Suri. After the meal, so he ate grain of pizza, mushrooms, and other things that it would be popular today to eat mushrooms as comfort, okay? So, and Chav was hoping to eat comfort after the Suri pizza. And Rav Ogel Echlach Zatosi Gengis, the Russian Apichinen, who sealed the real meaning in Sikha. We see the real meaning in Sikha. So in other words, that Apichinen really means kampot, something that you take out and put on the table after the meal. After the meal. So for Shmuel it would consist of the Oye, and for Rav it consisted of pigeons. Whatever it is, we have. ורב חנינה ואשירה ורבי יחנן, כן תמורים קריאס וגייטים, ואת וקופות וגייטים, תמור is fruits. So in other words, so according to Shmuel, and according to רבי יחנן, the one is not allowed to eat anything after that. In order that Tam Pesach should remain in his mouth. תניה כבוסי, רבי יחנן מפיר נחה פסח, כן morgen grüß again, so we pass on like Shmuel and Rabbi Yechanan, not like Rav. Usually, whenever they come out, we can have Shmuel to look at Rav in Yisure. So here it's Yisure. But here it's Shmuel and Rabbi Yechanan are both Chalik and Rav. And we pass on like Shmuel and Rabbi Yechanan, that even the same, that one is not allowed to eat after the Pesach. And as the Pshad in Matzirin Achara Pesach, then there is a machlekes in the morning as to whether there is a similar mitzvah not to be machzir achar matzah. This is how the expression of the king was coined in respect to the matzah. The morning doesn't mention